Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 45% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 45% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is the Chris and Amy show on KMOX, and there has been a lot of discussion about tariffs, which were supposed to begin today for Mexico and Canada. Those have been put off, but those being levied against China are actually happening in the moment. And we also know that Google searches for the word tariff have gone up like 5,000% over the last couple of weeks. So to school us a little bit today is John Horn, professor of practice in economics at Wash U's Olin Business School. And John is with us now on KMOX. We appreciate your time. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
We're doing okay. So what is a tariff?
What is a tariff? A tariff is just a fancy word for a tax. It's a tax which is put onto goods which are imported into a country. So someone in a foreign country produces something, they ship it, they here to the United States. When that good comes into the United States or that service is provided in the United States, a tax is imposed on it. That's what a tariff is.
Yeah, and John, it's funny because my guess is there are a lot of people that hear that President Trump is placing tariffs, a 25% tariff on Mexico and Canada, and their first reaction is Mexico is paying that tariff. Canada is paying that tariff, when really it's the American business owners and individuals paying the tariff on that good.
Yeah, so there are two ways we like to think of taxes in general and tariffs, again, are a particular useful way of thinking about this is who actually writes the check or who actually transfers the money to the government. And the tariff is paid logistically by the company importing. So if I buy beer from Mexico to then sell in the United States, I pay the tariff. I write the check for whatever the amount that is, and I send it to the U.S. government. I can then say to retailers, wholesalers, customers, hey, I had to pay this tariff. You have to pay me more for the beer. In which case, the consumer, the customer in the United States effectively is paying the tax. In some cases, this is not the majority, but in some cases, I can say to the Mexican beer company, I'm not going to import your beer unless you give me a lower price so that when I pay the tax, it's the same as I'm paying you right now. And only in those small cases does the foreign company actually, quote, pay the tax because they're getting a lower price for their beer. In most cases, I either just take it on the chin and say, I had to pay the government, I'm stuck with paying the government, or I pass it on to consumers or retailers or wholesalers in the United States. Mostly it's in the United States that it gets paid.
So how often does that happen? You said it's rare where a company can get the Mexican, a company or government to lower their price for us. How often does that really happen?
Well, I don't know if there's any good estimates on, what percentage of time. What it comes down to is one of the options for the Mexican beer company. If they say the only place I can sell this beer is into the United States, then they will say, yes, I'll accept a lower price because I have to produce the beer, and the only place I can sell it is in the United States. Then we, in, you know, we call that, they're very inelastic. They have to accept the price, and so they'll take the lower price. In most of the products and services, you know, people buying it here in the United States say, I have to buy that beer, or I have to buy that steel, I have to buy that aluminum, I have to buy that wood or that oil or whatever. They'll pay a higher price because they have to buy it. And so what it comes down to is who is more flexible on finding alternatives. And again, there's not really a good estimated saying it's, you know, 30%, 70%, et cetera. It really comes down to, for the products, you know, I would say to the listeners, for the products you're buying, if it's something you're going to buy anyway, you're going to pay a higher price. If it's something that you can go find a U.S. manufacturer or just say, I don't need to buy it, you're probably not going to pay as much of an increase in price.
When weighing any domestic policy, foreign policy, you have to look at trade-offs. And while on the surface it sounds, oh, well, this is great, this is encouraging companies to buy and sell and use American, but what are some of the critical trade-offs here that we're looking at with higher tariffs?
Well, the other thing that the tariffs do in general, taxes in general do this, is they restrict the amount of the good or service that's actually traded. So not only will the prices change, but we'll actually sell less beer, we'll sell less steel, aluminum, et cetera. And to the extent that those are goods and services that are inputs to other goods and services produced in the United States, we're just going to be producing and making less stuff already. And so there is some uncertainty about whether that's going to increase unemployment because companies won't be producing as much. That depends also on what happens with the immigration push that's being done. Is that going to shift people where they have jobs and replace people who might be deported? The other thing we have to think about is, to your point, is the longer term effect. You know, so say not going to buy beer from Mexico anymore, as this example, if we keep using that. How long would it take American producers to increase their brewing capacity to produce beer to replace that? And that may not be in the next week or two. That could take longer term. And then it gets down to companies deciding, look, is this going to be the new normal where we're always going to have to be producing this beer? Or 3 years or 4 years from now, are we going to go back to buying Mexican beer? And now I got this new plant, which I can't use. So it's not, there is no immediate, it just happens right away. And the long-term dynamics could have a big impact too.
WashU economics professor John Horn is with us on KMOX. There is, we've heard from President Trump that there's going to be a short-term, it's going to be tough for people short-term that we're going to have to wear it, but long-term, the benefits are going to be there for us. There's no timeline on that. We don't know, okay, is it 6 months from now, a year from now? What would you estimate? And first of all, is that true that there will be a long-term benefit? And secondly, when would that happen? When would we see it?
Well, I hate to keep saying we don't know, but in terms of the long-term benefit, it depends on the other goals that these tariffs are trying to achieve, which, as the Trump administration is stating, it's not just about producing more in the United States. It's also about stemming the flow of fentanyl and stemming immigration. Those could be more immediate impacts. But in terms of the direct effect on inflation, and I think that's what most people are interpreting those statements, is that the pain would be short-term inflation. But in the long term, we'll be producing more in the United States, and so therefore prices will come back down. One thing we know about prices is rarely do they come back down. When across the board, yes, inflation raises prices, but those prices tend not to decrease unless there's a major recession, which to me is even more pain. So I'm not exactly sure what is meant by in the long term it's going to be better for the United States, unless we're thinking not the next 6 to 12 months, but, you know, potentially years down the road.
What is the potential impact of this more belligerent approach to some of our closest allies or trade partners or geopolitical adversaries like China. What is the potential impact of these few days on our longer term relationship?
Yeah, it's a great question, because it seems to me that there are sort of two primary ways in which this could play out. One is the rest of the world looks at this as, this is the second Trump administration, there's three of this, and then things will go back to normal, normalizing what it was before the last 8 years. And so let's just, we'll make any agreement we need to, we'll make sure the tariffs don't get imposed, and then we'll go back to the way things were before. The other alternative is they look at this and think this is the new normal for the United States, that it's not just the Trump administration, it's whatever administrations come afterwards. And the risk there is the rest of the world says, why do we need to put up with this? Let's just shift and find other countries to do trade with and to work with. And that's where I think a lot of, you know, people who are looking at these issues saying this sort of sets up well for China, because they are the only large economy other than probably the European Union collectively that would be positioned to be an alternative to the United States. And so the risk long term is that the rest of the world says we can't keep playing these games back and forth and being threatened by tariffs. We're just going to find alternative ways of trading with the rest of the world, and we're not going to trade with the U.S. anymore. Or to the same extent.
John, you mentioned the word recession a bit ago. How likely is our blanket tariffs like this to cause recession for us? I know there's already concern within Canada. It might cause one for them. But what about for us?
Yep. Well, it depends on how long the tariffs are put in place. It depends on how broadly they're imposed. And it depends on whether other countries retaliate, because, you know, we talked about if there's a tariff put in the United States, it's going to cause inflation on those products and slow down production in the United States in those industries. But if other countries like, you know, Canada and Mexico had threatened to impose either the same tariffs or higher, and China today came out and said that they're going to impose tariffs on the United States, that will hurt our exports, which slows down our economy also. And if this happens, you know, if this, you know, dig in the heels and we're going to keep these tariffs in place until the rest of the world sort of agrees to our terms of trade, then it could lead to a recession on both sides, both the tariffs we put in place and the tariffs retaliatory that are put in place on us.
What risk do increased tariffs play on potentially increasing like special interests and cronyism in D.C., because we know the automotive industry was already pursuing tariff carve-outs last week. And if you have the energy sector or other unions pushing back against the president, there could be, you know, under the table tit for tat, like just lobbying and so forth. Do tariffs increase that in Washington?
I don't know if I would say increase necessarily, but I would say it's for the tariffs themselves, there will absolutely be those kinds of conversations. I mean, we know this from the first Trump administration. There were a lot of carve-outs with the tariffs that were used previously when they were imposed on China and others. And, you know, as you said, there already is maneuvering to try to get special carve-outs for special industries. And the more that happens, the less it feels, for one thing, like foreign countries feel like they need to say, okay, we will, you know, we agree to whatever you want. We have to get these tariffs to be taken away, because if they have industries that are still allowed to export without paying the tariffs, then they don't feel the pain and there's no harm. So I think there is the risk. Unless this time there are no exemptions made, once you start making lots of exemptions, then I think there is uncertainty about what is traded with the government to get those exemptions put in place.
Lastly, John, I think the thing most people listening are going to want to know is, how is this going to affect me and for how long?
Yeah, you know, that's a $64,000 question. It really depends on, you know, if we look back in the first Trump administration, there were a lot of threats of tariffs. And then other countries said, no, we'll change And so the tariffs were taken away almost immediately. We've already seen this now. You know, Canada and Mexico said, okay, we'll send more troops to the borders. And the tariffs were paused for 30 days. You know, the tariffs on China last time did stay in effect for quite a while. But even then, there was a huge agreement which was made in early 2020 with China. And they said, look, we'll buy more stuff from you. We'll send less stuff to the United States. Stop with the tariffs. And then COVID really hit. And so it never really was implemented. I think a lot of concern is that that was just, you know, lip service to get the tariffs to be taken away. I don't know if President Trump this time feels like, nope, these are going to be put in place so I get exactly what I want 100%, in which case the pain could be felt for quite a while, or if these are negotiation ploys and tactics that, you know, 3 days from now will be taken away because victory is claimed. And so it's hard to say. It really depends ultimately on how assertive and how dedicated.
Well,
to imposing these.
Yeah, John, we really do appreciate your expertise. Thank you for visiting with us today and helping school us, because I think a lot of people are very confused as to what's about to happen here.
Well, I hope it helps.
That is John Horn, professor of practice and economics at Wash U's Olin Business School. It is the Chris and Amy Show on KMOX.
Who would like to go to the Outlaw Festival?
I would.
See Bob Dylan and Willie Nelson and no Raj.
What?
I think
I can't go.
You're too connected to the station to win.
Oh, I can't win the free tickets?
Yeah, you can buy them.
Okay.
Or maybe someone will win them and
take me?
Fall in love with you and take you.
Oh. Well, that sounds like an idea. Drew's looking
Our
at me and nodding
Drew.
Like, yeah, that could happen
that
to
could
you,
happen.
Chris.
Yeah.
Maybe somebody will.
Maybe love will find you at the Outlaw Festival.
Yeah, I'm not too worried about
it. Hey, should you be the sixth caller now?
I don't see why not.
Let's be the sixth caller to the contest line.
Yeah, don't call the regular number. Otherwise, you'll get in trouble.
955-1120.
314-955-1120. Looking for caller six, and you will get to go to the Outlaw Festival. Willie Nelson, yeah. Bob Dylan, June 28th at Hollywood Casino Amphitheater.
We need to have Michael Kelly. I think Michael Kelly does a Bob Dylan impression because he had...
How does it feel?
Is that Chalamet?
That's Bob Dylan.
That's him?
Isolated vocals, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I thought he sounded good there. How
he
does
did.
It feel? I understood
you,
it.
Have you seen the movie?
Yeah. No.
A Complete Unknown?
No.
I haven't either. I've heard that he's pretty good in it.
Yeah. No, Chalamet, well, I heard Bob Dylan said Chalamet is good. But what I was going to say is Michael Kelly has a Bob Dylan impression, I think.
Everybody did a Bob Dylan impression.
Well, Michael Kelly has a good former Governor Mike Parson impression.
Well, yeah.
He was really good at it. It was good.
It was a little mean, but it was
it
good.
Mean?
I kind of thought so.
I don't think it was mean-spirited. I thought it was endearing.
Endearing?
It
okay.
It was.
I think he's...
I'm sorry. I didn't know it was
maybe
mean.
We should...
I thought it was endearing.
We'll have him do it on Friday.
Yeah. We'll have him do Mike Parson and Bob Dylan.
Here's the thing about Bob Dylan
what if it was Parson having a conversation with Bob Dylan?
I don't think Michael Kelly could pull that off.
I'm texting him. I'm going
to
text
tell him to
him
get
right
it ready.
Now. Okay.
But I think that the Bob Dylan impersonation,
yes.
along with like the Jack Nicholson impersonation, it's just so overdone. And the Bob De Niro, like it's just so overdone.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
What?
Are you on a first name basis with him? You're super cash.
Have you ever heard people refer to him as Bob De Niro?
Never.
I call him Bobby. We're tight like that.
Never?
Never.
Get out more.
Never.
I'm telling you.
I've heard of Leo DiCaprio.
Yeah.
I've never heard of Bob De Niro.
Oh, yeah. A lot of people call him that.
Bob De Niro sounds like a guy you just might meet on the Hill.
Probably have. I bet there are De Niros from the Hill.
314-436-7900. Text us if you're a De Niro or a... Never mind.
What?
A DeFaro.
Why is that?
You're not on your game today.
Near and far.
Oh, you're so... Oh, come on.
Yikes.
I didn't know what you were...
That's the second time. This guy, the jokes are going over his head today. Anyway.
DeFaro. Do you know how angry I am at you right now? I mean, it's off the charts.
Yeah.
That was a rough.
It was so bad. De Niro DeFaro. Like, what is she talking about? I didn't realize she was making a bad pun.
I can't believe you didn't realize that. That was the first thing I realized.
All right. Hey, you're ridiculous. So there's a sports betting is going to be legal mm-hmm. here in the state of Missouri. And there are legitimate concerns about the, you know, it becoming a thing that people can do here in the state. Also, some stuff going on with St. Louis County and the attorney there, the attorney's office there, the costs of investigating that off. There's a lot going on in the area. We're going to get into much of that when we come back. It's Amy Marks Kors and Chris Ranji on KMOX.
Well, Ranj, a lot of people will be betting on the Super Bowl on Sunday. Will you be one of them?
Yeah, I will be on the Illinois side.
Okay.
So I'm gonna go ahead and place a bet. It'll be easy to do it. I see I'm one of these people that doesn't do a lot at a time. You know, just a little bit here and there. Might do a couple of props.
So the American Gaming Association is estimating that Americans will wager a record-breaking near $1.4 billion legally on this year's Super Bowl 59. $1.4 billion. I don't know if I would have thought the number was higher, but maybe just because it's one day. That's a lot in one day.
It is a lot in one day.
But
just for one game, it is a lot.
Yeah,
but
one
naturally
day.
It would be for the Super Bowl.
Yeah. So do you do all the bets where, you know, Saquon Barkley is going to get this many yards, Patrick Mahomes is going to throw for that many yards?
So that's called prop. Those are prop bets. So if you're betting on individuals to do something, you know, to hit the 150-yard mark or, you know, how many touchdowns they throw or whatever, and there are for any game, the Super Bowl's different.
Yeah.
There are way more little different things you can bet on,
mm-hmm.
like hundreds of things you can bet on. But for even a typical game, like a regular Sunday in September, you can bet on like 150, 200 different elements. But it is, they're tough. You know, you've kind of have to do your homework. You can't just, I mean, you can if you want, but I wouldn't recommend just like, you know, this feels right. I'm going to throw some money on this.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do it that way, I would say be very conservative with how much you spend. You know, a couple of dollars here, a couple of dollars there. I wouldn't do like these mm-hmm. $100, $200 bets unless you just have it. Unless you're one of those people that $200 means nothing to you.
The prop bets, you know, we talked about this, like watching football games, at least for me. I'm not a red zone person, but I also don't play fantasy.
Right. So I don't like fantasy either.
I just want to watch the game. I want to watch the Chiefs game. I don't want to watch 10 different games with 17 different broadcasters all talking over each other. However, that same feeling of fantasy football fans for serious bettors, like the prop bettors who've got all these bets on all these different games, I feel that same vibe where they're just not enjoying the game. Everything is about points being scored and how much they're going to make on this or that.
I think for a lot of people that is true. In my experience, being around people who bet and people who do fantasy football, and there's a lot of overlap. A lot of people do both. I feel like I hear more fantasy football, oh, this guy's on my team stuff that I would typically hear, I put a bet on this game. That's just my experience.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean it's true everywhere.
So I know we voted this past fall to legalize sports gambling in the state of Missouri.
And there's no hard date on that, except that believe it has got to be done by December, but
of next
it could
year.
Happen,
yeah.
yes.
It could,
no, no, no,
sorry.
This year.
But I it forgot could happen. It was this year.
You forgot it was 25,
yeah.
didn't you? But it could happen earlier than that.
So, and I said this, I get it. I get that sports gambling is the way the culture is going. All of our surrounding border states have sports gambling and hey, we're losing that money. Personally, it's not what I don't think it's a bigger benefit to society than it is. I think the risks are higher and I can say that on a moral ground, personal, whatever, that's fine. And you can disagree. I think most people do. Although it was a bit closer than I thought it would be. I thought it would be an overwhelming pass, like 80%, but it was closer than I thought.
Well, the initial polling was not close at all.
Yeah.
But by the time the election rolled around, that gap did narrow.
And I've talked about suicide, some really interesting information coming out of Ohio. I think it's Ohio State. that came out with this information and data that suicide is highest among all the addictions. Like gambling addicts have higher rates of suicide among all addictions. 1 in 5 or 20% of problem gamblers attempt suicide. Because there's a stigma, you don't talk about it as much, there's shame in losing money, and you just keep thinking, well, one more will all hit. Another striking stat that I saw is that gambling rates among teens and young adults, meaning very young people and teens, you know, the addiction rates tend to be 2 to 3 times higher than that of adults. Ronj, technically, you're not supposed to be able to gamble if you're in high school, right? If you're
correct.
A teenager.
You got to be 21.
How many high school students have gambled money through like gambling apps because they were able to skirt the
like an
age
offshore
limits?
Sort of
whatever
thing
it
or
is.
Having
how
a
many
bookie?
High school students, yeah, do you think are gambling gambled last year?
Are we talking raw numbers or percentage?
Sorry, percentage.
I would say 25%?
75%. And they say between 60 and 80% of high school students across the board, like across the country, all the numbers they're getting is between 60 and 80% of high school students reported gambling money. But a more specific survey narrowed it down to 74%. So they all kind of jive.
That's interesting because the
shockingly high.
The college number of 21 and over is 75%. From the numbers I've seen, there might be, and maybe there's some overlap there, but that does seem very high to me at the high school level, that it's 75%. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of doubt with those numbers. If that's what they say, then that's what they say, but I'd like to see more extensive research on
it. So the NCPG, I'm going to pull this up here, it is, and this is through the Associated Press, this is through national data that they found, which I don't think you can get more comprehensive than like a national federal study reported through the AP and then also specifically through smaller. But the national data was 60 to 80%. California, the study they did, it was 74% of students. I just thought that was a really, really high number. And I will say with my experience with young people in my life, not so much the apps, but the idea of gambling, poker, whatever it may be, is really popular for high schoolers. I knew when I mean, 10 years ago, I knew there were underage kids gambling on apps. I guess they could skirt the limits somehow. But that number seemed high. Even if you're pro gambling, right? Let's say you voted for it. You want sports gambling. Does that concern you? And how do you curtail something like that?
I do have a little concern with it. I think the overall idea, though, that these apps and the gambling itself does bring revenue to states, which can be used. Government money is not always going to be spent well, and I think we all understand that and agree on that concept. But I think the idea that it does drive tax revenue and that it's really sort of at this point, unavoidable thing because it will continue to spread around the country. There could be a critical mass point where we get to this level of, you know, let's say it's 40% or 60% of people are placing wagers, and that'll be about it. I think there's only so much growth that can happen when it comes to gambling. There will be a plateau at some point. By and large, though, it's the tax revenue that does come into states will probably always supersede whatever risks come on the other end of it, whether that is a 19-year-old or a 20-year-old that gets involved in gambling, or somebody who develops a gambling issue, and there are a lot of people where that does happen. Mm-hmm. There are also a lot of resources for people like that who do have gambling addictions that you can always access.
314-436-7900 to call or text if you have thoughts, because there was a study out of Purdue, I believe, that said for every gambling addiction, it costs taxpayers minimum $10,000, because with addiction comes, you know, depression, alcoholism, other addictions, divorces, whatever it may be, sometimes domestic abuse. Like, it can kind of really spiral out of control, right? And so there's a lot to be taken into account. With the teens, Ronj, it's interesting. This is like the Associated Press as well. Some teens, I had never heard of Fliff, F-L-I-F-F, sportsbook, that there were kids who were able to figure out how to get their extract their winnings on Fliff, even though they were under 18. For the record, Fliff didn't respond to this story. But this teen who was interviewed said, you can take a picture of your parents' ID or your fake ID. You know, you take that picture, you upload it. And he's like, there's ways to get around it. And you can sit and watch football and just place bets.
Well, this is where
under 18.
This is where the parents' responsibility is going to have to come in. Can't let your kid get a hold of your stuff, right?
Well, and also, like, I mean, ideally, like, build, you know, morals and character that, like, lying to gamble and the dangers of gambling. And two, a lot of teenagers are not rolling in dough, their own dough.
Yeah, it's mom and dad's money.
Yeah, but I think if they're betting, they're probably betting with their own money. In the sense, because I mean, obviously you could track the credit card and so forth, but you know, say they're working and they're using their own money, and then they get, once you start going into debt, you think, well, I just need one more, you know, one more to get out of it. It can be really troublesome.
Yeah. So, and that's the thing. I would, anybody who is considering doing it, it doesn't matter what level you're at. If you're a novice at it, or if you've done it for a little bit, always set some boundaries for yourself. Always. Mm-hmm. And you can even set them on apps too, where they'll, you know, they'll stop you if you try to bet a little bit too much or more than what you've set for yourself. And then if you think you've developed a problem, use the resources. There are resources. There are numbers that you can call and they can guide you in the right direction and make sure you do something about your addiction. Now, what I would say is people are going to find ways to do this, and it's in my opinion, it is better to have them well regulated, have them out in the open, as opposed to using some sort of bookie who has his own app that you use, and it's not legal. There are, I do still know a lot of people that will use those kinds of methods to place bets. Just more it's regulated, the better we're going to be, because people are going to do it.
They are. I will say 100% you legalize it and you can sit in your family room and be on the app. The ease of it is it's the same psychology as the one-click purchase with Amazon, right? It's so easy. Or when people delete Instagram off their phone and keep it on their PCs, just because it's that convenience. You are naturally going to have more people gambling if it's legal and easy and it's in the palm of your hand. You have a casino in your hand 24/7. It is easier that way.
Congratulations to Vicky in Rock Hill. Going to go to Outlaw Festival, which takes place June 28th at Hollywood Casino Amphitheater. Willie Nelson and Bob Dylan will be performing, and Vicky's going to go see them both. We will have tickets tomorrow and for the rest of the week. So if you missed out today, just be listening for your chance to win every day for the rest of the week on the Chris and Amy Show. A texter here from a 618 says, give the tickets to me. I'll have a date night with Ranji. We can compliment our watches. Okay.
Whoa.
Hey, nice watch. I know, but you have to be looking in the bathroom?
Ew.
Yeah.
All right. Well, have fun with that.
That's Amy Marks Kors. I'm Chris Ranji on KMOX.
Well, the Board of Aldermen met.
Oh, everything's resolved.
Everything is resolved.
Great. So the money's going to be spent. The city is going to be transformed as a result of the money being spent. This is great news.
Well, I think what they did is I think they pushed off the decision on the Rams settlement money until after the spring elections.
Well, I gotta get drunk and I sure do dread it, cause I know just what I'm gonna do.
Is this what they were doing at the Board of Aldermen meeting today?
Why not? If you're not gonna make any decisions.
Yeah.
That song talks about spending money, though, so it's not.
Oh, yeah.
Not doing that.
Oh, yeah, he did spend his whole paycheck.
Man, you know what? Could we just do it? Could they just give us the authority to figure it out and spend
it? This is mean. I'm not trying to be mean, okay? But if you had to pick six random people off the street or the Board of Aldermen, who do you think could spend the money more effectively?
Well, I would still pick the Aldermen.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of backstory they don't have.
There are six people on the street.
Yeah. There may not be six people on the even if I went to Kirkwood, though, I still would rather have the Board of Aldermen do it.
So,
but I just need them to do it quicker.
Hey, I just want everybody to know, though. I know we've been picking on the St. Louis Board of Aldermen, but We can also pick on the St. Louis County Council if we want, or really specifically Sam Page. So you remember when Sam Page and Governor Parson were arguing about who got to appoint the county prosecutor? Remember that?
Yep.
Okay. I just want to make sure. So a legal battle costs money. And right now, we're looking at a bill of $111,000. But that could possibly go up. Well, the overall cost will go up past $130,000, although there is another month of billing on the way. So we don't know what that top number will be, but let's just say $130,000. And apparently a lot of the county council members were shocked that the cost was that high. They knew it would cost something, obviously, because in fact, our friends at Fox 2 last month said, well, they've spent about $19,000. Okay, that's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But to jump up to $130,000 is an awful lot. And Dennis Hancock, the council member, said if the county executive had any kind of relationship with the governor, Page is the head of the largest political subdivision in the state. You would think he'd be able to pick up the phone and say, hey, can we work something out? But I guess they don't have that kind of relationship.
Well, can we...
with the former governor.
I know that I can only do one thing at a time. So let's figure out the city problem first, because everything starts with the city of St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll work our way out. Okay, so Amy, you and I,
mm-hmm.
we will handle the Ram settlement money. Give us a couple of days. We're going to have it all allocated. We're going to have it all figured out. And then we're going to move over to the county
and
pay their bills.
How to pay the legal bills.
Yeah. So
$130,000 is a lot.
And you've got the auditor who we have spoken to before, who just audited the St. Louis Circuit Attorney's Office from Kim Gardner's dealings, Scott Fitzpatrick, who is, again, the Missouri auditor, and is now taking a look at the county prosecuting attorney's office. So there's an investigation on spending and outside employment practices there.
Well,
at least there's always something to talk about.
At least there, I mean, we are never going to be short on topics. I will say this, though, in all seriousness, to the city of St. Louis and the leaders therein, please do not blow this.
I think ultimately they're going to figure this out. It may not be done optimally or...
Oh,
The way, like every single thing done the way I would want it to be done. But I think they will figure it out. I think they'll get to an end point that's pretty good. It may not be the best, but the likelihood is it's going to be pretty good.
I feel like if 100% is 100% optimization of this money, right? 100% is 100.
I bet they get to 70.
Wow. I was saying 40, where you'd be like, oh, that's better.
Yeah.
But what happened to the other 60%?
Yeah. No, I probably 65, 70. I think it's going
question.
To end up doing a lot of good for a lot of people, but I promise you there will be things that fall through the cracks.
But serious question. Why do you feel optimistic to the point of 70? What have you seen that shows you that makes you feel optimistic?
Because I think there are people who earnestly want to do right by the city and are trying to, and there might be just enough influence there to get it done. Again, I don't think everybody who's involved in city government by a long shot has the city's interests in mind, the people of the city, but I think there are enough. I think there are enough that we can hopefully push this ball in the right direction.
But you can definitely understand the cynicism coming out of this past month.
Yeah,
yeah,
of course.
And coming out of this past month, they didn't really knock it out of the park with the meeting last week.
So we'll have Sean Malone, who attended the meetings today with the Board of Aldermen. We're going to have him come in with us tomorrow. Mayor Tashara Jones with a statement on what happened, saying the Ram settlement money could now become a top issue in the upcoming race. So the primary for mayor a month from today, the election is April 8th. So, yes, it will be an interesting next couple of months. Tomorrow, we're back with you at 10 o'clock here on KMOX. Amy Marks Kors and Chris Ranji. Anything you missed on the Odyssey app, download it to your phone. Dave Glover Show is next.